You are now checked in to Stand Up New York Labs. Oh, yeah.
Welcome to Guys We Fucked. Guys We Fucked.
Guys We Fucked.
I'm Christina.
I'm Corinne.
We're sorry about last night.
Coming to you from Stand Up New York Labs. Guys We Fucked. We Fucked. The anti-slut-shaming podcast. I never stop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Guys We Fucked.
The anti-slut-shaming podcast. We're in New York City. Maybe you are, too. That's cool. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
I'm Corinne.
I'm Christina.
And we're sorry about last night. For once, I'm actually not. I got a lot done yesterday.
Did you really? You sent me long paragraphs of emails.
Oh, because I was up all night working.
I was like, you're like a little secretary.
Yep, that's what
Good for you.
So yesterday, I actually got some stuff done. But I don't get stuff done like normal people. Like, I went home and I took a nap from about 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. And then I woke up and did work until 4 in the morning.
Wow.
But that's what I do.
That's pretty productive.
That's how I roll.
That's a good way to use your time.
I can't do work when other people are doing things around me. I like to wait till it's just quiet.
Like when,
it's just,
when mice are at play?
Well, when it's just me and the mouse, I was going to say. Literally, the moment my
name them.
Roommate,
this is hilarious.
It's just one now. It's one,
one lone mouse.
It's one rogue mouse. He was straight up chilling next to this $50 fresh cab stuff I got, the stuff that I told you that smells like Christmas trees.
Yeah.
He was
the thing that's supposed to kill him.
Yeah, he was just hanging out.
He's like, that smells good.
Yeah, cool. He was like, I love Christmas.
What else you got, bitch?
Oh my God.
Oh, you got little traps with cheese in them? Hilarious.
He was really cute, though.
It's a MacGyver of mice.
That's fine, though.
How's your sex?
How's my sex?
How's your sex?
I mean, when I have it, it's good, but it's like I haven't had sex.
Up.
I haven't had sex in forever. Okay, it's been like a week. A week and a half, something like that. I mean, the last person I had sex with was Craig Mahoney, I think.
Oh.
I think, I'm pretty sure.
We're pretty sure it happened.
I mean, I don't even know if we, yeah, that's
it
and
happened.
That's so unclear in and of itself.
You know, life has so many mysteries.
The thing is,
one of them is, did I fuck Craig Mahoney or not? And maybe you'll live to see the day that you solve that problem.
He has been texting me nonstop. Like, he pretends he doesn't like it, but he doesn't text me about sexual stuff. He just texts me like things, and I'm like, I'm sorry.
Just like, that sign is green, just so you know.
Yeah, I was like, I'm sorry. Did I want to hear about your life? No, that's why we just had sex. Like, no.
You guys are like Lucy and Desi.
When people tell stories, I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't remember knighting you my boyfriend. Shut the yapper. What are you doing?
You gave him permission to talk.
Oh,
keep
boy.
Talking.
Oh, goodness gracious. I mean, he's great. He was very excited because he got some followers on Twitter.
A lot of girls think.
I mean, there was one I saw. He is a hottie.
Yeah. Ladies.
Yeah, he's
ladies.
He's a hottie if you like long stories. I don't.
I do.
I'm not a
long story. Tell me every detail.
See, the
what
only
color was everything.
Like, I once thought John Steinbeck was my favorite author, and then I realized most of his books are much longer than The Pearl, and I was so upset.
That's your criteria?
Yeah. Well, I mean, just get to the point.
Yeah, I get it. That's what I'm like.
Even Charles Dickens. I mean, he's a top-notch writer.
What happened this weekend? Did I hang out with you? I don't remember. I'm trying to like recap my week. I don't think anything really happened.
I don't
happened.
Think so. I did comedy all
we
weekend.
We went to Hump.
Oh, yeah.
On Sunday.
We went to the Hump Tour.
So
film
much
festival.
Fun. Oh, man.
Guys, if you don't know what that is, well, number one, thanks for not listening to last week's episode.
Yeah, Jess. Way to reveal yourself to us.
And number
see
two.
See your true colors. Anyway,
number two, it was great. Although I will say, not the best thing to do on a Sunday afternoon when you haven't had sex in a week and a half. I was like,
were you really horny?
I was so horny, and then I just peed, and I was like, oh, I think that was actually just it.
I had to do a benefit show for children after that.
Oh, that's right.
It did not go well.
I'm sorry about that.
They didn't think I was funny at all. And then I did another show after that, and everyone thought I was really funny. So I was like, I should kill myself. No, never mind. Life's great.
Wasn't it like Harrison was on that show. Harrison Greenbaum.
Yeah, he killed.
He said he didn't do that well. He said the crowd was tough.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough, but he's always great. It was for a fashion high school.
So,
for a scholarship. And I had like rape jokes about how, you know, college is raping me in the ass with the money. And it's just like all the jokes I had, like, you know, black people selling candy for drug money on the subway. Like, it was all black people. I'm like,
I was going to say it's fashion high school.
Ugh.
I was like, that sounds
but
like
as a comedian, you got to not give a shit.
Right.
You can't care who's in the audience because
right.
they probably will think you're funny, whatever you say, as long as you own it. And I just, I don't know. I was scarred from that long, long time ago where I just did awful. So I was like, ugh. But the second show, I redeemed myself.
Yeah, and also Gotham's like a way. When you don't perform on a stage regularly, it's a little tough to like. It's you know, you have that home court advantage when you're in places that you play in.
Oh
often.
My God, absolutely. Grizzly Pear, I was like, oh,
Grizzly Pear. I mean, come on,
you killed it.
That was amazing. Yeah, well, I'm gonna save most of my really personal stuff to talk about with our guest. As I need some advice.
Yeah. Well, we have the perfect guest on today.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm so excited.
Well, the thing is,
this is a dream.
This is the thing. Christina has been talking about this week's guest for like since we started the podcast.
Yeah.
Since before. It. And I'm gonna be straight up because this is about honesty. I don't know who he was, but
no, I'm trying to be honest with you right now.
Literally,
like, so honest.
Everyone
with you?
I know, my mother, like when I told my mom, and like when Zyfy reacts strongly to something, like I know it's quality,
right?
Because she doesn't. She's not. You know, she doesn't get real. She's like me. She doesn't get excited right. about things that do not. You know. Earn
like, here's $1 million. Cool.
Yeah. She was like, he is a legend.
Yes, he is.
He is like
a just, hero.
Yeah. My roommate, I thought might cry when I told her.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to get something signed. I don't know what. I'm going to have to find something. No, why? I can't give my roommate
tit.
My tit.
Here's my tit.
There's so little of it. I need
sad.
To keep it for myself, you know?
I'll shave off some of mine.
I got to
no,
catch.
I won't.
But a fun thing, I mean, I don't know what this has to do with anything, but I will say yesterday I was thinking maybe I could have sex. I didn't. But I did take a shower, and then I have I have a vanity now. So that in my new apartment, I have a vanity, which has been a lifelong dream. Because
what a princess!
I
love vanities.
And
I just want a table with a mirror on it.
No, well, because it's exactly bed level, so now I can get like a full body look of myself like all the time. And I
love that.
And I like turned around and I was like, "Damn, girl, you looking pretty good." I've been working out a lot.
Good,
but,
you
like,
do look good.
You know, I can tell how I look from, like, the back, like, if it's, like, fat coming out over my ass or if it's, like, an actual, like, shape. And I was like, you look fantastic.
It's a curve.
And then I fell asleep and then just cleaned up some mouse poop. So that was kind of wasted.
It's a good day. I actually don't. I broke my mirror in my room a while ago. Uh-huh. And I don't have a mirror in my house except for my bathroom. And
what?
I thought that that would be weird because I have to look at what I look like outfit wise to make sure I don't look like shit.
I need to make sure the shoes go with the pants.
My life has gotten a little better now.
Yeah?
All I look at is my face to like paint on it.
Well, the face is the most important. Don't you feel like I
don't need a full body anymore because I'm like,
you know,
I don't judge
like.
Myself harshly in mirrors anyway. Like, I don't give a shit. But it's life is a little better without a full body mirror. I gotta say.
Yeah, but what if things just get completely out of control?
Ignorance is bliss, baby.
Oh, God. See, I don't. I mean, it is, but then I'm too much of a control freak to do that.
I mean, I have a bathroom mirror. I could see. I could jump up and see my body for 2 seconds.
Well, I just end up standing on the sink, though, if that's a thing. Oh, so many times I've stood on the sink.
Sometimes I stand on
the toilet. I'm always standing on things just to get a full view of it. That's funny that you said that, though, because there was the other day when I was at the gym, and this older woman and I, we stood next to each other, and we did makeup together in the mirror silently for like 15 minutes. We didn't say a word to each other. And in my head, the whole time I was thinking, this is fucking pathetic. This is fucking so sad.
You know, I kind of have that. When we see girls do their makeup on the subway.
Yeah.
But like, it's not. I don't know why I feel like that's weird. Like, I'm like, why are you doing your makeup?
I am that girl, so.
Right. But I don't know why I think it's weird. I can't do my makeup in public because I don't want people seeing me paint on my beauty.
Oh,
you know
I don't
saying?
Care. See, I don't care. There's only specific, like, I'll walk around looking like a hot mess, like, all the time. There's only specific people that I care about. What, like, that they can only see the good current.
Right, because they, otherwise it's like.
Like, my coworkers.
Do you have HIV?
Just get, yeah, they get, they cancer? Get leukemia current all
should
the time.
We do, should we do
is
a
that,
walk for you?
That's probably not, I don't really care.
Do you have
I mean,
a worm?
I care if you have leukemia, but. That's gonna be offensive. We'll get some emails about that. So let's read a couple of the comments because I know we've been.
Oh,
I don't
want
to neglect the listeners. You
those
guys
are mostly emails you have in your hand.
Have
by the
been
way.
Awesome. We got a really interesting one called "Whore to Prude." Help! Yay! It says, "I was in a previous relationship where we had sex everywhere and did everything, but we weren't compatible as a couple. Now I'm in my almost 2-year relationship that started rocky, but now we are great. Except I've turned into this prude, and that's totally not." Not me, and he's a complete whore. I think you mean sexually explorative.
Yes.
Which I think is just super. We've had great sex before, but now he's trying to introduce squirting and butt play and gagging and rim jobs. And I'm like, I want to, but I'm feeling like I've got writer's block. But for fucking help, any advice? By the way, found your show by accident. Love, 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 love it. You two are the greatest. Oh, yeah. By the way, I'm 32 and he's 24. Interesting. Nice. Side note, he's great, responsible, and caring, though he can be super emotional. Sounds emo. Signed your token black female listener.
Ooh.
Port City girl. Thanks, girl.
Thanks.
Sorry
that you're feeling a little writer's block in the puss.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That analogy makes sense. I don't know. I think that it's one of two things. Like, one thing that could slow down my sex drive is birth control sometimes when I'm on birth control. I just don't have it. It just gums and waves.
Right.
And it has been when I've been on it for 3 months. Actually, someone wrote in asking what birth control I'm on. I'm on low estrin. It's the only birth control that doesn't make me a raging bitch.
Right.
Which is wonderful. But the sex drive has gone down a little. Not that much. So maybe that, or you're not attracted to it.
See, I've been on birth control since I was 18, so I don't even...
You don't even know.
For me, I'm...
But you're a pretty horny gal.
I'm always horny. The thing that makes me not horny is being tired or being distracted by
being
comedy.
Hungry.
No, hungry? Oh, when I'm hungry, I'm the horniest.
Really?
Because for me, I always am like, if you want to fuck me, don't feed me. Like, for real. That's
really?
Because it's the same...
One or the other?
Yeah, it's one or the other.
Really?
After sex, let's go eat. But if we have sex before,
in your relationship, do you like not eat as much?
No, I just eat.
I eat more.
Eat and then fall asleep and then we don't have sex and then the relationship falls apart, obviously.
Yeah, that's like when Steve and I were like, do we want to order Chinese food or do we want to have sex later? You got to make that compromise.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's usually food. I mean, like, I don't know. It's been so long since I've been in a relationship.
I don't know. Maybe if the boyfriend is asking you to introduce squirting. I don't know how you introduce squirting. Although
you're either a squirter or you're not. Not everyone can squirt.
Actually, no, I take that back. Actually, Steven technically introduced that to me.
No, I remember. Yeah.
So maybe you can. But the guy really has to know what they're doing.
Not everyone is like it's
but
not,
everyone's different. Everyone's
it's not like
vaginas,
a thing that everyone can do.
There's
though.
Not a button.
Not 100%
that you press and it's like singing in the rain, you know. This commenter. Okay.
Well, wait, are we supposed to give advice to this? I'm just not sure what to say.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
That's why we're not good at giving advice.
I mean, we're not.
I would communicate.
Givers.
Like, what do you want? Is your sex drive lost completely? If so, why? Like, it's all about getting to the root of why. Maybe it's because he wants her to do things that she's like, dude, no.
Yeah, it's too much. I think
it's a lot of pressure.
I think our guests. I mean, it's, you know, try anything once, and so try it. I mean, unless it's like something that you like. Unless he's like, I want to cut you. I mean, I would let someone cut me, but
really
lightly.
Cut you.
Yeah.
With a knife?
Mm-hmm.
So you like the porn. Okay. All right. Like rougher.
Yeah, in fact.
Like an actual knife?
Yeah, no. Yes, an actual
like,
knife.
Kill you? Like kill you in your bed with a knife?
No, I'm not going to like let someone slit my throat, but like if they wanted to cut like a little bit so like a little blood came out, that wouldn't bother me.
Interesting. I guess it's
on my
similar
arm,
to the pouring the wax.
Not on my face, but that's, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, can't do that.
I don't know. I think blood is sexy. I also have a dream of dating a vampire.
You are. Yeah.
A little gothic.
Oh. I don't know. What would you say to this girl?
I would say try it.
Try it.
None of those things sound too crazy to me, honestly.
Butt play.
And you might discover something that you like that you didn't know you liked.
Yeah.
You're 32. Just fucking do it.
Just try it.
He's 24.
Maybe have like a safe word. I don't know.
Yeah, of course.
Have like a notion or like either a word maybe that you say that it's like too much. Don't stop. Like whatever the word is, like Al Gore or George, you know, whatever. I don't
or
know.
Just say, hey, stop. I feel uncomfortable.
Well, yeah. Sometimes it's like, stop. No, don't stop.
Right.
You know, one of those things.
Right. I don't know. The only thing I could say is like, some people have a problem with gagging because if they've been in previously like an abusive relationship. So I can see that.
Yeah.
Like I know a girl like that. Other than that, I don't know. I think it's totally fine.
Shall we bring on our guest?
Our guest has just arrived. So
oh, my God. I'm so excited.
We are going to bring him on and we'll see you in a sec, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
We're not worthy. We're not worthy. We're not worthy.
With our very special guest, Mr. Dan Savage.
Hello. Thank you so much for coming.
Host My pleasure.
Of the Savage Lovecast. I'm so excited. We were talking about Hump and how much we loved it.
Oh, I'm so glad you got to come.
Yeah,
you enjoyed
amazing.
It.
Yeah, it was so good.
Artie Port. Yeah, it was so horny afterwards. It was great.
That's what we were just talking about. I was just like, oh my God. That was the worst thing to do on a Sunday afternoon.
I know.
Yeah. The worst and the best thing, I guess.
So we have 1,000,000,000,000,000 questions for you. But I would like to start with a very random question that has nothing to do with you personally, but more of like advice. Prostate milking. What the fuck is
good
that?
Good opener.
Is it fun? Have you done it?
You need
is
an opening
fun?
To get to the prostate. So
how can you do it? Yeah, my transitions are like, so let's talk about dicks. Like, yeah. I don't transition very well. What do you know about prostate milking that you could share? And how do you do it? And is it fun?
I've never done it, and I've never seen it done to anyone. I've seen videos. Who hasn't seen videos? And I'm sure half your audience is Googling prostate milking right
seen
now.
I haven't seen a video of it yet.
It's a kind of like, usually you hear about it in the context of BDSM humiliation play with somebody who's keeping a guy in chastity, maybe wearing a CB6000 cock cage, a male chastity device, where the guy will claim, or perhaps it's a biological reality for some guys, that, you know, if he hasn't come in a couple of weeks, his prostate will start to ache because there's all this spunk sort of building up in there, parked in there. And theoretically, and I guess in practice, because I've seen the videos, you can massage someone's prostate, and if you do it enough, I don't know how many times you have to rub that lamp before the genie comes out, but if you do it enough, the semen that's built up in there, the seminal fluid, will leak out of his dick. So it's a way of like relieving a guy of his sort of blue ball swollen prostate without giving him the pleasure of an orgasm.
Through his ass, through his anus.
Yes.
Wow.
That's very interesting.
If I wanted to learn how to like do it right, I guess I could just watch an instructional video.
Yeah, you could Google it. There's plenty. Google prostate milk. Milking, chastity, and I don't know, slave, and tons of stuff will pop up.
Is this something that you're looking into doing? When Christina sends me emails with topics, we send each other emails, and I was like, what the fuck do you need to know that for?
I
like to learn as well, but
it's a very specific niche interest. It's for somebody who wants to, you know, ejaculate basically without having the pleasures of coming or climaxing.
Right.
So it's usually performed in the context of some sort of dom sub relationship where one person is like taking all their sexual pleasure and sort of lording it over this other person that they can come whenever they want to, male or female, and you don't get to come at all. And in fact, at the times when I let you see your pathetic semen, it was drawn from you without you driving any pleasure at all.
Okay. That does that sounds better.
Still interested.
When you explained it. That's
still
not,
interested in
it. I'm more into it now. Okay. Well,
did you hear that, Men of New York? Line outside the building by the time.
Yeah. Oh, brother. You don't even know. We usually start out with like talking about our own personal lives, but we saved it because I was like, we have the guru of advice, and I personally need some advice. Do you need advice, Christina?
I'm doing pretty good.
Is that
good?
All you needed?
I do want to talk about the porn star stuff.
What you want to know is where you can get a prostate gland of your own now.
Yeah, that kind of sounds fun.
So,
No, it's the opposite of fun. It's designed to not be fun. That's the whole point.
It's fun for the milker.
It's not fun for the milky.
I'm the milker.
Yeah, that's true. You would have to be.
The word milking is so not sexy. Unless it's like a milkmaid, maybe. That would be sexy. I don't know. That was from like an old maid deck of cards I had when I was like 4.
Wow, okay. Bringing it back.
Thank you. So we developed this concept. I think last week we developed a concept. It's called the tier of sluttiness. And we don't use that word on this podcast, but this particular week we did. Because I'm seeing someone who's like 15 years older than me, and it's definitely like a monogamish relationship.
Which almost all relationships are. It's just most people don't know it.
Because I was listening.
Do you think most people act on it, or in their mind it's monogamish, like meaning they can go off in their mind?
When you look on the stats on infidelity,
right,
and some people have such a broad and all-encompassing and frankly castrating notion of what monogamy means, and they'll define monogamy as you don't look at porn, you don't masturbate thinking about anybody else, like crazy.
I used to think
like that
when I was little. When I was 16, I yelled at my boyfriend for looking at porn, and I was like, we had an episode called this. I was like, why can't you just jerk off to me? And now I like love looking at porn with my boyfriend. It's one of my favorite things in the world. So it's interesting how that evolves.
I feel like if you have a boyfriend who does jerk off to you, you've like hit the jackpot. Because like even sometimes.
I like when guys are turned on by someone else who isn't me.
No, I'm not saying all the time, because then there's something wrong.
Yeah, because then it's why are you with me?
You're like, oh, you just jerk off to me. You know, he's about 15 years older, and he's I usually am like the more sexually explorative one in the relationship, but he is definitely he's just been around longer. He introduced this thing where we'll be having sex and he'll tell me about the other stuff that he's done with other people.
And it turns you on to hear
it.
In
the time. Yes. And I never would have thought that until he introduced it. And I was like, I really like this. But then recently he told me something in bed that was cool. And then later on, I got more details about it because we were like going to a place that she worked at, like a place that he frequents. And I didn't know this. Like, this is a place he goes every day, like a coffee shop. And
there she was.
So he was like, well, do you want to come in? And he was like, and I was like, why wouldn't I? And he was like, well, that girl might be here. And I was like, does she work there? And then he was like, yeah, because he had told me he met her there. And I was like, no, this is someone you're going to see like every day, possibly two times a day.
What's the problem?
Well, are you serious?
Is he fucking her now? Does he want to fuck her now?
I don't know, but it's like, it makes me weirded out. And then he kind of explained the whole situation. And there was a lot of like romantic qualities
to it. It's a straight person problem.
Is this really?
It's total bullshit straight person. Because you guys have the luxury, because there's so many fucking straight people in the world, 90%+ of everybody.
Right.
You have the luxury of saying, you're not allowed to ever see this person again. It's like, gay land is so small that we don't have the luxury of like exiling people because your current boyfriend fucked that person once upon a time.
Is it because the gay world is so small, or is it because you guys are just more relaxed about that shit? Like, just more like accepting.
I have a lot of gay friends that are so relaxed.
No, I was going to say, young gay people tend to not be relaxed about it. The longer you're gay, the longer you're out, the more relationships that you have, eventually it dawns on you that you can't play these kind of insecure bullshit straight people games because there's not enough of us. My ex-boyfriend cuts my son's and my husband's hair.
Okay.
And we hang out. And when I'm in Chicago, I have dinner always with my other ex-boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, it's not an issue. It can't be. It's not an issue for us, not because we're like better and smarter and braver, although we are. It's not an issue for us because it can't be an issue for us.
It's not. Right. It was never even an issue for you.
No, when I was young and insecure, it was an issue.
There was at one point.
But you grow out of it because you can't exile people the way straight people insist on their current partners exiling people.
No,
I wish I could change my mind about that whole notion of,
it's more the romantic thing, that like the romantic qualities of the beginning that
of the encounter
of the encounter, like romantic kissing and stuff. I don't care. I'm like, you can go get a blowjob from anyone. I really don't care about that stuff. In fact, better someone else than me. But
that's a hurdle for a lot of people, even in open or monogamous relationships, is seeing their partner have feelings for someone.
Yeah.
I prefer to see my partner Terry doesn't like me to talk about him, but you know, I think in general, people should err on the side of fucking around with people they like,
right,
as opposed to treating people like
objects
like what are the fleshlights or boxes of Kleenex.
Right.
I don't, you know, I would rather people that you know, friends with benefits starts with the word friends, and you should be friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people go out of their way to be shitty to people that they have NSA sex with.
Oh, yeah, no.
And a lot of people will be shitty to someone that, you know, they're in a non-monogamous relationship, and they're dumb and they're doing it wrong. I'm just going to say you're doing it wrong. And to demonstrate to their primary partners their commitment, they will be shitty to the people that they see on the side or the people they've had one-offs with. And I just think that's crap.
Doesn't make sense. Yeah, you don't. That's not necessary.
No.
It's not a necessary part of the equation.
Oh, yeah, no, I hate when people are mean to other people for no reason. That's ridiculous.
But it's not for no reason. People think they have to communicate like to their current partner that, oh, she's not a threat. See how badly I treat her?
Right.
Clearly not a threat. Like, the world needs less of that. And so if you're in an open relationship, you have to be down with seeing your partner be nice to somebody they had sex with. Be into them. We can have an open relationship. You can fuck anybody you want as long as you don't like them.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, I'm actually
friends. How can you hate everyone you fuck? Why would you want to
fuck someone
you hate?
I'm friends with a girl he had sex with, and I'm like, I think she's really cool, and that's not a problem for me. Yeah, I guess it was just like and it's also like because it's in a different state. It's like I mean like a close state, but all right. I can't get too detailed.
can we ask you more about your relationship? The term monogamish, I think, is you're the first. I mean, you coined that term, and it was the first time I have ever heard of that idea of. Could you define it for us the way you define it?
Well, I backed into it, or I pulled it out of my ass one day because Terry and I are together 20 years. We have a teenage son that we adopted at birth, and we're a gay male couple. When you're a gay male couple and you say you are not monogamous, people assume a level of outside sexual contact, promiscuity, recklessness, frankly, that just wasn't true of our lives. Even other gay people will assume a degree of sort of sexual adventuring that wasn't true of us. We were much more monogamous than not. we were mostly monogamous. We were monogamish is kind of how I came up with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, to say we're not monogamous makes it sound like we hardly ever have sex together.
Right.
When we almost always only have sex together.
Right.
And
right.
then every once in a while. So that's what it means. But, it, you know, it can mean anything because monogamous means one thing. It's always the same. Here are two people who only fuck each other.
Right.
Not monogamous or monogamish. Everybody has different rules, setups, what's permissible, impermissible, affection, poly, three ways, don't ask, don't tell agreements. Like yeah. monogamous is always different and unique.
The the stipulations and the rules and the limitations are always different for every couple.
So I came up with the word because saying not we were not monogamous, Terry and I, felt like it was inaccurate or it was leading people to make the wrong assumptions about us.
But for the first few years of your relationship, you were monogamous.
Yes.
I can't even say the word anymore. It's like, doesn't even exist. I'm like, monogamous. How is that transition? And the reason I ask you that is because my boyfriend and I, I've never met someone who just speaks about sex so intelligently and casually. He's actually the one who turned me onto your podcast. And ever since then, I was hooked. And he talks about sex the way you do. He used to date a porn star before he dated me.
He's in the room.
I know. Hi, Steven.
Okay, just so you know, I didn't know if you realized.
No, I know he's in the room. I just didn't know the audience. I don't know. I don't want to confuse him.
Our whole thing is we're going to pretend they're not here.
Anyway, so... But the idea of, we both kind of agreed when we started dating that the idea of monogamy and the fact of you're fucking one person for the rest of your life doesn't make sense, doesn't feel natural, just doesn't.
Well, it's not natural.
Right. And so the fact that we both agree on that makes me like weight lifted off of my shoulders because the idea of spending forever with him just seems that more exciting because it's never.
Because it doesn't impose limitations on you.
Exactly.
You know, there are upsides to monogamy, and I'm always in a rush to acknowledge them so that people don't think I'm just taking a shit on monogamy every day.
Mm-hmm.
Around paternity, that kid is yours. Around, you know, protection from disease. You know, when you're not monogamous, you are signing up for greater risk of sexually transmitted infections. And if you can't deal with that and you can't be an adult if or when that happens to you, then not monogamy is not for you.
Mm-hmm.
And emotional security for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
There are downsides, though, around boredom, resentment, being taken for granted, the death of sexual adventure. You know, there's this interview that, what's her name? Mrs. Brad Pitt.
Angelina
Jolie. She gave this interview where she said, you know, when I was younger and I was wild and I was lesbian sex and I'm bi and I did S&M, but now I'm with Brad and all that's in the past. And I just thought, how sad for Brad.
Yeah.
That marriage means the end of adventure, possibility, kink, playfulness. If we define commitment to mean that sex drive of yours, which if you're male or female or a sentient is crazy and takes you in crazy places and you have these weird fun desires and this desire for new experiences and variety, all of that is snuffed out. All of that ends at the altar. No wonder people
gotta keep the adventure.
Don't marry. Yeah.
Well,
have
I mean,
sexual adventures together.
That's like, is that a straight thing? I feel like straight couples, one, they don't communicate with each other as much. Why? I don't understand that. And I'm guilty of that.
Because you didn't have to look your mom in the eye when you were 15 and say, I put dicks in my mouth. If you tell your parents, you know, you go, I'm,
yeah,
I had to go to my mom and say, Mom, I suck dicks. And that's, you know, I said, I'm gay. And what she saw were like dicks flying into my mouth, right?
Just like soaring from the sky.
Yeah. And once you say that to your mom, saying anything else to your boyfriend is not as scary.
I should talk to my mom.
Well, and that right there, I mean,
I don't talk. I don't talk to my mom. We don't even talk about it.
No, it's not just saying you put dicks in your mouth because she expects you to put dicks in your mouth because you're a girl.
I think she's aware of that.
But there was the amount of communication when I was younger. When I first told her I had sex, and she asked me, I had a boyfriend at the time. We were safe about it. She asked me, I didn't lie.
Mm-hmm.
She walked out of the restaurant we were at and didn't talk to me for a few weeks. Yeah. So that's the relationship. So it's like,
how old were you?
I was 15.
Wow.
Yeah. I'd been dating my boyfriend 3 months. The day I got my braces off, got it in. Yeah. Got those teeth. Anyway, yeah. So I wonder if that has anything to do.
It does. You know, you're set to a certain degree of sexual honesty. Like closeted gay people aren't set to sexual honesty and truth-telling.
Oh, God, no. I live with one.
Openly gay. Really?
Brutal.
Does he listen?
I hope not. Anyway, I hate him. Wait. He's a horrible. The one who wore the cape in Williamsburg. Jesus Christ.
Oh, that guy was such a jerk.
Yeah.
One person wore a cape in Williamsburg? I thought that was a thing.
One person in her apartment.
One person in my apartment.
Many people.
Many people in the Williamsburg
flew around in capes. And are flying around.
No, but that explains why I spend so much time with gay men, because I explained it to you. You're like, I took Christina to a gay club. And she was like, why don't I hang out here all the time? I was like, why do you think I only hang out here? Because it's the one place where I feel free, not judged. I hate feeling judged. Not that anyone loves it, but I like really, really hate it.
Yeah.
You know what? what
the way straight men judge women.
This
like that.
Idea that gay bars are this judgment free zone.
They're for only women.
Unless
for only
you're
women.
Gay.
Yeah, I know.
If you're a gay guy, you're screwed.
That's the irony.
I go to straight bars.
Oh, yeah.
To feel not judged.
Exactly.
To feel not scrutinized.
Most judgmental place for gay men. I mean, please don't even walk in there unless you have a six pack.
Oh, there's all kinds of fights going on that we have no idea about. But
I say this to my I meet straight women like, oh, gay men are all so nice. Why can't straight men?
No,
be?
They're not.
No, they're nice because they don't want to put their dick in you.
Yeah.
If you were a gay dude, they would not be nice to you.
No, it's super hostile.
It's so nice when a guy doesn't want to put his dick in you. It really is.
Well, I mean, unless you want his dick in you, then
it's
nice.
Like, that's a different story. But like to walk into a bar filled with men with the music that I want to hear and everyone's dancing, having a good time, and no one's trying to fuck me. That
but what
is
if? But insane. What if you wanted to get fucked that night and you're trapped in this
room
full of
fags?
Then
I go home and fuck Steven.
Oh, well, there he is.
So easy.
So he's good for something.
No, I've taken him to... We went to a gay bar on New Year's Eve.
We did.
After, and
he's the toast of the town.
He was actually talking about how he wishes that straight women would be as upfront about how they feel...
Straight men always say that until a woman is that upfront, and then they run
She's
screaming.
Crazy.
Oh yeah, I think we all know that doesn't work for me. I mean, like I'm very upfront, and it's horrible, and that's
you
why
could be upfront and polite about it, and like smooth.
You could be, but I'm
straight women don't usually tell men like how they if they're attracted to them. It's always the guy hitting on them.
Yeah,
women can hit. Women should hit on.
Well,
guys.
We proved the point when I fucked Craig Mahoney.
Yeah.
So that was
you
great.
Did.
So for as far as the tier, this is for the listeners.
We had a guest on our live podcast 2 weeks ago, and we were just talking about like how hot he
him?
Is. Uh-huh. She did because she.
I just aggressively hit on him, and then I was like, okay. And then I invited him out, and he didn't know this, but I was like, I'm not going home until we have sex tonight. And then we did.
Did he sign some sort of release form that allowed you to talk about this?
Yeah, he was on the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he didn't mind.
Yeah, he loves it. He got more Twitter followers. He's ecstatic.
When you said he got more, I thought you were going to say. He got more twat.
He got more twat.
So much more twat after that. Oh, man.
He actually probably did.
Twitter twat, the best kind.
Oh, yeah. I think he did. Some fans are tweeting at him.
But do you think, as far as like the tier of sluttiness, how important do you think that someone is on the same level sexually as you? Like, do you think someone can be like a lot more prudish and it still work out? Or how important is this same sexual?
I know for a fact that someone can be a lot more prudish and can work out because my husband was a lot more prudish when we got together.
And you kind of held his hand and
were you ever prude?
Me? Well, I was a Catholic boy. Of course I was a prude. And that tension is fun. You know, sometimes the first time, I was young and just becoming sexually active, the first time a guy like lifted up my arm in bed and started licking my armpit, I thought he was the most disgusting human being on the earth.
How interesting.
I couldn't believe that someone would do something so vile.
Yeah.
And, now that's good morning, honey.
That's the first time someone ever licked my ass. I was like, why would you ever? And now I'm like, please. So it's like,
your armpit.
You really changed.
Why don't you milk my pretend prostate with your actual tongue?
So interesting. Okay.
So you know, people grow and change. And some people who are less experienced, you know, the trick with someone who's less experienced is, you know, sometimes they resent or they fear the more experienced partner. And sometimes they're like, teach me, teach me, teach me. And that's what you want. You want someone who's like, teach me, teach me, teach me.
Yeah.
So if they're on different levels of
Because I feel a mix of that. I feel a little... When you're dating someone, you know, you ever date someone who's just like that Don Juan type? Like, it's just a person who just...
Panties drop
when he walks
in the room.
Or boxers drop when he walks in the room, you know?
Dirty thrift store underwear drops when he walks in the room.
And I'm pretty self-confident, but I mean, there's only so much a human being can handle. You know, I'm still human.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just very hard when literally your boyfriend walks in the room, everyone wants to fuck him. That's tough.
Have you seen my husband?
I see you though. You guys are both super hot.
Dude,
well, no, my husband
got it going
like,
on, Dan.
Kind of nuts, insanely hot, and you know, we walk. You know, if we're out of town and we go to a gay bar, like he has that effect on people.
Oh,
underwear drops all around us.
Does it make you proud? Like make you kind of like, yeah, I know.
Yeah,
that's what I would do. I'd be like,
it turns me on. It's not like, here's my hot car or anything.
Right. It's not an object.
It can be annoying for him sometimes, though, because sometimes he doesn't want to have that effect on people.
Right. And it's out of his control.
Sometimes he gets hit on, you know, it would be wonderful if everywhere you went, everyone wanted to fuck you. If everywhere you went, you wanted to fuck everyone.
Right. If it was on your terms.
Right. But he goes, you know, sometimes people who have that effect on people are surrounded by people that they wish would pull their underwear back up.
Right.
Yeah,
that's true. That's a lot of women I know. Yeah. You walk in, you're like, no, please, not today.
Yeah. All those poor, hot baristas who deal with it all day long. Male and female.
Yeah.
Who are in this position of having to be like sort of smiley nice, which is misinterpreted as flirty.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, tell me.
Yeah.
And then they have to like, all right, pull your fucking pants up.
Yeah, you got to go through that.
That's
again.
Why I'm just not nice to people.
But like, I wanted to ask you though, with the monogamy, because you were monogamous in the beginning of a relationship, then it was
for many
introduced.
Years, yeah.
So I was saying the idea of not fucking one person for the rest of my life is really cool, and it's nice to have be on the same page. Totally. When I was 16, never. I was one of those like, I'll cut you with a knife if you cheat on me. Like the right. Well, you know, that's
and that's that, how Terry was at the beginning of our relationship.
Yeah. So that's why I want to ask you, like, how do you? I don't have any interest in sleeping with anybody else right now. I'm still
that's
like
a wonderful sign.
Madly, madly in love, and like I don't want, you know, like we'll go to strip clubs and it'll be like that's. Adventurous for us, and it's not that adventurous, mm-hmm. but that's just enough. Like, you know, he'll get a lap dance. I'm like, ooh, let's go. And so that's fun. But how do you, I guess when it gets introduced, it's natural. It comes at the time where you want it to happen, right?
My personal experience and anecdotal evidence from the successful, long-term, mostly gay, monogamous relationships that I've observed is that there's a period at the start of effortless monogamy where there is this desire to not sleep with anybody else, or you know, this even this awareness that you could, but no desire to. Mm-hmm. And then it transitions into a kind of openness that's not about, oh, we're not into each other anymore, we're not attracted to each other anymore, so now we're gonna fuck other people and stay together because we're good partners or a pair, or I like you, or we live together, or we have a mortgage. What seems to happen is this transition to we've poured this cement foundation that is so strong, and we're still both so into each other, but we've been fucking for 4 or 5 years. And here's a way to like throw a log on the fire. It might be mm-hmm. someone else's log. We're going to throw a log on the fire. Mm-hmm. And it's this sense in these successful, I think, monogamous couples that I've, you know, known and been a part of, this sense of bringing in sort of, or like going to that strip club. You guys yeah. are on a sexual adventure together. It's erotically charged and it reignites your passion mm-hmm. for each other. And there have been times, you know, where something's going on and you look at each other and think, I'm so glad that I'm with you right now. This wouldn't be happening if we weren't together.
Right.
And those are wonderful moments.
It kind of
moments.
Unfolds naturally. And like the limits yeah. of that sexually charged, maybe it's a strip club, and then 5 years later, it's a swingers party. Or maybe the
or
levels
a three-way,
change.
Or,
it evolves just like,
right.
don't watch porn.
And when the don't watch porn thing is crazy. That's when the moment happens, yeah. you'll know it. And this is anecdotal. Someone needs to actually study this and spend the money, but no one ever will because, you know, there isn't money in this kind of sex research. Mm-hmm. But anecdotally, the people I know who had open relationships where they were both fucking other people right at the start, like we're together.
That's my question, yeah.
Those don't last.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that is. Mm-hmm. And I don't think lasting is the gold standard. Like, I think short-term relationships can be successful relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
Defining
learn something from every relationship.
Right.
So.
And, you know, two people come together. They're together for however long they're together. And then they move on and they both outlive the relationship. And if they liked each other, they learned, they grew, they're still friends or friendly. How's that not a success? Does it always have to end yeah. in a funeral home for a relationship to be
right.
a success? Somebody died. Yay for you. Successful yeah. relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
So I know people who like are together, you know, come together, and I don't want to judge them because it didn't like become a forever relationship. But most people are looking for a forever relationship.
Right.
And the ones where people are not monogamous out of the gate don't seem to be forever. But maybe those people don't want forever. And so it's an unfair standard by which to judge their relationship.
Right, right, right. Is that what you, because you
that was what I was going to ask, actually, yes.
Art wouldn't be monogamous at all. Like you would be monogamish. Going into it, right?
I can't even. I mean, I've been in. I've been in a 5-year relationship. I've been in a 2-year relationship where I didn't. I had no interest in having sex with anyone else. Like my last breakup, which ruined my life.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why this podcast started.
That's why. She got
dumped.
We're all here today.
My boyfriend used to be a porn star. I couldn't handle. I got really jealous. So I was like, let's do this podcast.
And I got dumped by the love of my life in a Panera Bread. So that was fun.
Ruining a chain of restaurants.
I know.
Everywhere you go,
I kind of ruined it for me too.
I really. Like the cream of chicken and wild rice soup. It took me a year to eat it again, but I've eaten it. And I just a couple weeks ago, I ran into this person a year after we hadn't seen. He's has a new girlfriend, lives with this girlfriend. Like he's definitely gonna marry this girl. Like I know it. And I had a mental breakdown.
You can't marry her if you have him killed.
Don't encourage her because she will do things.
No, I would never do that. I would never do that.
Could have been worse. You could have broken up with you in a Starbucks, which there are many more of.
Don't ruin Starbucks.
Backseat of a yellow cab everywhere you go in fucking New York City.
Can't take a cab. We're in the subway.
I feel like would be a very New York-y place to get dumped. So many fights happen in cabs, you know?
It's like Sarah Jessica Parker would get dumped in a cab.
It's totally know? SJPP, yeah. but I don't know. It's fine. I'll get past it. Everyone's tired of hearing me, bitch. Literally, everyone.
That, I never I've never so seen sick. Someone go through such a horrible breakup before. Have you had those breakups where you're just devastated and want to die?
Yeah.
What is your advice? We have a lot of young listeners who may have not even gone through that first terrible breakup. What the hell? I mean,
Well, you wallow, you eat ice cream, you go to the gym. It's amazing how, like, healing it is to, like, exercise. I don't want to be, like, a body fascist faggot about it, but go to the goddamn gym.
Yeah.
And, you know, be annoying to your friends for a while, but after, like, a month, suck it the fuck up.
Yeah.
A month, really?
A month or two.
You say for every year, a month of grieving.
Yeah, every year, a month of grieving. But then at a certain point, you have to, like, fake that you're fine,
yeah,
and then
yeah.
go through the motions. And then that, you know, the more you go through the motions that you're fine, the finer you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just important to remember, if you're listening and you're young, as I like to say on my podcast, every relationship you are ever going to be in is going to fail until one doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know which one that is mm-hmm. until you're dead or that person is dead. Then you're like, well, successful relationship.
Bummer.
And it's good to have some failed relationships under your belt in your 20s. You actually want to have that.
Yeah, I always think it's weird when you just kind of go with that first person, and I'm like, maybe you'll go back to that person, but just like someone you meet when you're like 17? That's weird. Yeah. I think that's weird.
Yeah.
I had a really ugly breakup right before I met Terry,
uh-huh.
Where I did the dumping, but I was devastated, and my ex-boyfriend ran out and sucked a million dicks. We all grieve in our own way.
Yeah, totally.
We were still living together, and that made it kind of awkward. And I didn't go out for 3 months. I was just really bummed because I had just turned 30 and I was in this relationship for a year. And I was like, I'm always going to be single. Why can't I do this? And the very first night I went out after my period of wallowing in self-pity and eating ice cream and going to the gym, I met Terry on the dance floor. So you just never know.
I think that's just that's very much like you gave yourself exactly the amount of time, and when you were ready, kind of like you just feel like this. The sun is shining again. Like
I gave
water.
Myself 3 months, three times more time than I give other people. We were together for a year and I took 3 months off.
Oh, yeah, God. Well, the problem with me was I was having sex with my ex for like once a month for like 6 months after
the breakup.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I mean, it was completely destructive. I know this, but I was like, I'm very sexual, but there's few times when I'm like so sexually attracted. So I cannot even.
I've had that
even
before.
Now.
You feel like a slave
I fuck
to
him right
them.
Now.
Like I know I shouldn't be going over his house at 3 a.m.
yeah.
because it's degrading to me as a person. But I'm not gonna not do it.
But
it's gonna happen. Yeah.
And the sex is the break. After you
I guess
up, it's
just
so good. The sex mm-hmm. is so good. Putting candles on, putting on 9-inch nails.
Oh,
great.
Well, that's
that's my right. thing. That's I really like that.
Somebody asked me at a college lecture appearance once. One of the questions was, are facials hot or are they degrading?
Uh-huh.
And I said, yes.
So like that's
you
perfect.
Feeling degraded by going over it. Still fucking kind of
hot
to be on the hook like that for someone, to feel that alive, to feel that even sexually controlled in a controlled way, like you weren't doing anything reckless or dangerous.
I chose to go there.
Right.
Right.
Hopefully you weren't being exploited or abused in this context, but you knew that it was a bad idea. You knew that you would never get from him what you wanted from him entirely, but you were willing to sort of humiliate yourself and settle for the dick. Like that's in a way that's kind of fucking hot.
Does that stem, or is it a dumb question that I asked? Like, is that stem from something?
Desire.
Or what about those there's porn out there that's just the woman just getting hit in the face or getting like the clothespins or the and
S&M
then she
porn.
Cry but the cry this is I've never watched S&M porn until recently. The crying afterwards but enjoying it is very confusing to watch because I'm like how
if it's not your thing it's going to be very confusing
but it's enjoyable to that person right?
There
they enjoy
pain. And there are people who enjoy that kind of release.
An emotional pain, it looked
like.
Yeah, see, because I think that's kind of hot. I think I'm more on board with that. Because earlier, I was like, I would like someone to cut me just a little bit. And Christina was like, what? And I was like, just a little bit. I don't want to die. Like, just a little blood. I don't know.
Get cut.
It's that kind of like that. I don't know. The pain.
Danger?
Not danger. There's like a little like, how much can you take kind of a thing.
Yeah. I see how that
and
is.
And it's doing it together with someone you trust.
Yeah, someone you trust, and that all body sort of endorphin release. Like that, those endorphins of people who run marathons talk about it. It's a 26-mile, they've shat themselves, they're in terrible pain, they cross the finish line, they collapse, they cry, and they're really, like what they endured, what they put themselves through, they're kind of proud of it. And nobody says to them, you're a fucking sicko, look what you just did.
Right.
Because it's not sex. When it's tied to sex, that kind of like pushing your physical limits, endurance, pain, sobbing, shitting yourself, add sex and suddenly it's not okay.
Yeah.
Suddenly it's pathological.
Right.
Take the sex out and it's the Boston Marathon. And it's
God.
Just sex negative double standards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you keep your cool so well when they, like, you talk about these, I get so fucking angry. At the beginning of your podcast, you talk about all of these religious rights activists and all of these people, like, protesting a gay soldier's funeral.
And sometimes those, protesting me.
And, yeah, protesting you. People on the news talking about you all the time. When people, like, with our podcast, like, we get people, like,
hey, these guys are whores.
Yeah, whatever. Like, I don't give a shit. That's actually hilarious to me. I enjoy reading those.
Any press is good press.
Yeah.
I love when people take the time to send me an email to call me a fag.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking that out of your day.
No, I know.
But those things like protesting a few, like, and people protesting your talks at college. How do
It's never religious righties who protest my talks at colleges. It's left-wing, radical, queer LGBT students who protest.
Oh, really?
Because I'm biphobic and transphobic and a rape apologist, which I am fucking not in any of those cases, not any one of those three things. And they scream and yell at me.
So they take your words out of context.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, you've been giving advice for 25 years in a column that's essentially pretty much a jokey and where I allow people to use the language that they would use to talk about this. And also, like, you sometimes get into positions where you have to take a side and take a position, and then some people don't like it, or they rip something from context.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that floats around out there is I told someone who had PTSD that I called her a shitbag. This is a person who created a sign-off. Every sign-off in Savage Love becomes an acronym in the response. Her sign-off became PTSD. She didn't have a diagnosed case of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
And it's just bullshit. Bullshit yeah. just flops around out there.
But you keep your cool about it, and you handle it with grace and humor and wit. And I wonder, have you always been like that? Have you always taken the world's hatred and just shittiness and...
I guess just being Catholic kind of sets you up for it.
Really?
Sometimes it gets to me, especially when I feel like it's unfair and it's relentless.
Yeah.
There's some things that have been completely removed from context where they get slapped up on a poster in a college before I speak there. And then I literally stand up there and I read the entire column out so you can have this in context. And it's
right.
clearly not saying what people are claiming that I said.
People right. take what they want to take and they make a story about
and
it.
And it gets annoying and tiresome, but yeah. does it like... keep me up at night, ruin my sleep?
Right.
Does it give me erectile dysfunction? Does it make my husband ugly? No, it doesn't do any of those things. So
right.
It's like, yeah, I'm doing just fine.
Yeah.
That's at the end of the day, I'm doing just fine. Well, I was listening to the Aisha Tyler podcast you did, the Girl on Guy podcast. I'm a big fan of her podcast.
As am I.
And you guys were talking about something. She mentioned kind of how, like, you're provocative and, like, you're pushing the envelope to make a point. And that's what I think our main goal with this. I'm not saying that everyone should do a podcast where they interview guys they had sex with. Not saying that at all. It has really affected our lives in a real way.
Just for clarification, I haven't had sex with either of you.
No,
Dan has not had sex with either one. He doesn't want to eat pussy. I heard your
if
whole.
If you're listening, Terry.
I heard the whole thing. No pussy eating for you. And I don't know if you're missing out or not. I'm not sure. I'll let you know one day. But so I thought that was a very interesting concept because I believe, like, you have to just push the envelope to make a point, to
you
make
have to
people
jump up
listen.
And down and wave your hands in the air a little bit to get noticed.
Right. And so do you feel that was a positive thing that you did? Like, you think it really, obviously it made a difference. Like, are you a fan of this or?
Of podcasting?
Of pushing the envelope.
Well, I don't think I'm pushing the envelope. It's not like I sit around going, what can I say or write? I just say what I think.
And right.
Particularly 25 years ago when I started, 23 years ago, when I started writing Savage Love.
Right.
Nobody wrote about sex
right.
in the newspaper using the language people actually use when they talked about sex with their friends.
Uh-huh.
That when you wrote about sex in the newspaper, there was sort of this Sanskrit you had to use. This other language that was very formal and medical, and you weren't allowed to say things like, three ways are fun. You weren't allowed to say things like, sometimes, you know, having sex with somebody on impulse that you don't know their name can lead to a loving and lasting and fun and kick-ass
relationship.
So more
just about being, like, brutally honest.
Yeah, and thinking things through. Like, there are times I've said the wrong thing or left to the wrong conclusion or... you know, asexuality was something I was like, what the fuck is this? When it first broke as an idea. And I was skeptical and thinking through it out loud in my column and my podcast. And now I'm sort of down with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like I was intentionally trying to provoke the asexual community, which I wasn't even aware of its existence
mm-hmm.
prior to the founding of AVN, the Asexual Visibility and Education Network.
I was like, AVN.
Just like saying what I thought, which was, what? No way. No, it's asexual. And then the more I learned about it, the more people got in my face about it. It's like, all right, some of you are asexual and really mad.
Yeah. Okay, I hear you.
God damn it, I'm a sexual.
Does talking about sex so much take away actually having sex for you?
No.
it doesn't take away the pleasure of, because I found once we started the podcast and we just, all we did was talk about sex, and then the podcast, we got like a lot of fans and they just want to talk about sex with us, which is cool. And that's what I want to talk about. But then it's like, oh, that specialness.
So sex seems like homework.
Kind of. Not really, but it lost a little bit of lust in the beginning when we were just talking about it all the time.
Well, I think it's also because part of getting on the podcast is having sex with us, so then we were just inundated with emails.
like,
yo,
no.
You're a fuck.
And I was like, how do I get on this podcast?
Yes, so like, if I hear a joke about that again, mm-hmm. I think it's just exhausting. It's more because, how many times have you gotten emails? Is that something that happens a lot? You get a lot of emails like, hey, you want to fuck? Like, is that a thing?
I have a sort of different relationship with my listeners, particularly now. You know, I wasn't podcasting 23 years ago because there weren't podcasts 23 years ago.
Right.
So when I was sort of younger and more embedded in the demographic of Savage Love, like, mm-hmm. my readers tend to be high school, college age, and 20s into early 30s,
right.
and listeners. So now I'm sort of this almost parental figure.
You're very intimidating, I will say.
Uncle Dan, as opposed to maybe I could fuck this guy, Dan. I mean, he could hit on a little bit. But not nearly as much as I would like.
I was going to say, do you want to get hit on more?
But
I would think you get hit on all the time.
Honestly, it's
a turn. Like, my boyfriend and I, when we first ever met, he talked about sex very similar to the way you talked about sex, and it was such a new idea that totally turned me on. I was like, I'm gonna fuck this guy.
I mean, I get hit on some. I get hit on.
I think it has to do with the intimidation factor, because it's like you are this, you know, now notorious sex pert. So that's a lot. That's a lot. That's scary.
I've also
been,
you know, Dr. Ruth.
I've also been partnered for 20 years.
Right.
So, you know, when that 3-year window when I was writing Savage Love and dating, mm-hmm. and you know, had a 1-year relationship, I would sometimes, you know, some guy would ask me out, and then he would be really sexually aggressive and awful in weird ways, because he figured that's what I wanted.
Oh, okay.
Because I wrote that crazy column, and so of course I've done everything in it, which I haven't, and don't have any interest in doing everything in it. I write about cunnilingus, for Christ's sake. And and that was awkward. But, you know, I'm perceived as married, parent, wise elder in some ways.
Never.
Which is, none of those are sort of particularly sexy roles.
Uh-huh.
Well, and I'm fine with it. And I don't write, you know, we're talking about it today, but I don't usually write or talk about my own sex life,
mm-hmm.
per Terry's fatwa.
Mm-hmm. We get that. Here.
I feel like that's maybe a little bit of staleness came in, was because we were talking about our personal sex lives.
Beware of that.
Yeah.
People ask me how come, you know, my sex column still exists and Anchor Renka Renkovich's from Details in the 90s is gone and Sex in the City is gone. Like, there was this explosion of sex columns in the 90s, most written by women. Mm. And the reason they all sort of fell away, and some people were just done writing their sex column. It wasn't like people got fired from jobs they wanted. Sex in the City writer lady moved on. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them, you know, died early deaths because the writer wrote about their sex life. And so eventually you break faith with the reader, because the reader senses you're not legitimately having these experiences or relationships. You're just out there in New York City fucking for material.
Right. And so right. It's fake.
Reader would pick up on the sort of get a sense of a dishonesty. They're being gamed.
Right.
And because my column, thanks to Terry, I stopped writing about my own sex life, it's had this longevity.
Yeah.
Because
right.
it's not about me or my dick. It's about you guys and your clits and dicks.
Right. Mm-hmm. Those get questions for days. Man. So is it, what else do I... had a question on the tip of my tongue.
Well, so speaking of people writing in and all that kind of stuff, along that lines, we get a lot of emails that are very, the comments on the SoundCloud, those are like, whatever, you know, things that everyone can read. And then a couple times a week, we'll get a very long, very personal email. We've made it very clear. We are not experts. We are not doctors. We're just two gals talking about sex in New York. From time to time, we get something that's disturbing. We don't know how to handle suicidal type emails. How, I'm sure you have gotten the same. How do you handle that?
First of all, you know, you look up advice in the dictionary and it says opinion about what could or should be done. The only qualification you need to give advice is somebody asked.
Right.
So don't be hesitant to share your perspective or your wisdom.
Right.
And it's not binding arbitration. So if your head is in your ass, they don't have to do what you said.
Mm-hmm.
You get sometimes disturbing emails. I try to write people back. I get 5,000 emails a week. It's more email than I can sometimes keep up with and read. Sometimes I will look for an email on my stack and I'll find one from 6 months ago from someone who's like standing on the ledge, someone who needs a priest and a fireman. and a cop and not me. And I think, God, I hope it worked out for you.
Right.
Because I didn't see this when it came in. And you just have to trust that people who send you those emails, sometimes it helps them to lay that all out and think it through in the composition of the email, mm-hmm. Which often I hear. Like, I'll hear from people a couple years later, I wrote you, you didn't write back, you didn't use my question, but writing the question really helped me, and here's where I am now. Just thought you'd like to know. Like, oh, okay. Then I go find the original email and read them both together. You can't let it terrorize you, and you can't let it, you can't have your heart broken by it, or you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Nathaniel Hawthorne wrote Miss Lonely Hearts, which might be a good thing for you guys to read.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll do it.
Is it Nathaniel Hawthorne? I may have my head in my ass.
Miss Lonely Hearts is the book?
I think so.
Okay.
I should Google it.
We'll Google it after.
But it's about a guy who writes an agony aunt column and eventually gets so sort of emotionally invested and wrapped up and in his reader's problems that he's kind of paralyzed.
Yeah, it's not like we're staying up nights about it. I don't think
I don't want to affect him in this person in a negative way.
And I genuinely I don't really know how to handle. I mean, I can definitely give my opinion. Like you said, that's not a problem.
Have some suicide hotline numbers handy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Say this is like above my pay grade, and I ache for you. Please call people who know what they're doing when it comes to this.
Exactly. Okay. No, I know you talked. Do you mind? I know you mentioned that you were never really suicidal, but for a little bit.
A tiny bit.
A tiny bit. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I was the good boy and, you know, Catholic family, and I was the youngest son of, there were four of us. I had a younger sister, but I was the youngest boy. And it was a long time ago. You know, I'm almost 50 years old. Mm-hmm. So this is the late 70s, early 80s. And I just knew that if I told my parents that I was gay, it would kill them. So I thought the good boy thing to do would be kill myself. Mm-hmm. It had been communicated to me in many small ways that my parents might prefer to have a dead kid than a gay kid.
Really? Mm. Well, that's a lot.
And so I thought, you know, there was a brief time where I thought I can never tell them, and so I'm going to have to kill myself because I can't have sex with girls all my life, and I can't bring myself to lie to some poor woman, a Mrs. Haggard, all her life.
Right.
And I'm not really going to be a priest now because I don't believe in any of this bullshit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then that passed, and I didn't leap off of anything.
So that's all. You never attempted, or just kind of like a little thought in your mind.
Yeah, suicidal ideation, they call it.
Right.
I definitely had suicidal ideation, but I never acted on it.
Because I feel like the thing is, like, for me, I never wanted to commit suicide. I mean, there have been moments when
I think about it.
I
sometimes
want,
like, oh, that'd be nice if I wasn't here. But
I think about it.
Act.
I hurt so bad, I want to die. But I've never been like, I am going to, you know.
You know what I think about now is I am the only gay guy in America who is not allowed to commit suicide. Imagine,
so
like,
yes.
The founder of the It Gets Better Project kills himself.
Oh,
that story.
No. What a domino effect.
I know. I will never kill myself.
I'm like a lazy depressive. Like, I want a bus to swerve and hit me, but I'm not going to jump in front of the bus. You know what I'm saying?
That feels good.
But, you know.
I want to suffocate to death in a rimming accident. That's how I want to go.
What's the... Can I ask you about your sex life?
Sure, and then I'll decide if I can talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can always, you know, if there's nothing if you don't want to talk about it,
I could talk about it, and then there could just be this skip that where the listeners don't get to hear what I told you, and you just edit it out, and they can be like, oh my God.
Yeah, they just guess.
And then people can come up to you and ask you in bars what I said.
That would be fun.
Is your sex life kinky, vanilla, a mixture of both? What do you got? What do you got going on?
It's both. Like, it's a mix.
Yeah.
Like, we both have our,
the
you know, kinks. All men have kinks, you know, and we both have our fair share, and we're both GGG. You know, GGG isn't something that I invented. My advice for people is to be good giving in game, good in bed, giving of pleasure, and game for anything, .. within reason.
Right.
That is certainly something that Terry and I had put in practice in our own lives before I started urging my readers to do it.
Mm-hmm. So if Terry wants to do something and you're like, maybe, and you're kind of neutral about it, you would suggest, like, along the terms of GGG, just do it. Like, just try and experiment and do.
Yeah, I mean, the problem that a lot of people have, particularly young people, when it comes to an out there, unexpected sexual request, is the sex negativity that's so deeply ingrained in us causes us to go, ew, yuck, no,
right.
Instead of, oh, really? Tell me more. And you would be surprised later in life when you look back, like that 16-year-old who freaked out when a guy licked my armpits and I thought he was a disgusting pervert. The things I enjoy now
Right.
That you, if you had suggested you to me then, yeah. I would have been appalled.
Right.
So, you know, you acclimate, you get used to things, you become more sexually adventurous, you get more comfortable in your own skin, you stop policing your desires and fantasies in this self-controlling, negative, awful way.
Yeah.
And you kind of grow sexually over your life. And that's one of the compensations for aging. Like, you're not as hot, but you're having hotter and better and crazier sex usually.
And the sex gets better and better and better with age, right?
No?
Yeah, I was like, I don't know about all that.
If you prioritize well, it, I certainly think the sex that I have now is better than the sex I was having at 29.
Yeah, right.
But I'm having sex with Terry, who I'm crazy in love with, and yeah. We're very sexually compatible and on the same page on so much that, you know, we lucked out. I feel like I won the sex lottery with Terry. Like, Terry walked into my life and it's like, oh my God, I have been masturbating about you since I was 13 and you just appeared before. My theory is that the person, if you're a man, the person you really desire most in the world will materialize in front of you at that moment that you've ejaculated their weight in semen.
That's such a good
metaphor. You just have to keep
metaphor.
Jacking off about that one sort of mental image of that person.
I just jacked off a Steven just perfectly with the glasses. Oh, that's so exciting.
I have a lot of jacking off to do because my guy's fat. I like the chubsters.
But are we kinky? Are we vanilla? Yes, we're both.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're pretty sexually adventurous and we've prioritized pleasure and compassion and meeting each other's needs and recognizing needs that can't be met by either of us and a tiny bit of outsourcing now and then.
Was there ever a lack of communication in your sex life with, like, in the beginning of your relationship? Because I feel like I want to help people who don't communicate, mostly straight people, it seems. Steven is the first person I met that I could really openly communicate what I wanted in bed with. And I know that sounds crazy, but
the hesitation usually is I fear rejection.
Yeah, judged.
Yeah, being judged. And you should rush toward rejection. You don't want to betray bad judgment.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, blurting out, I'm, you know, into bondage or I want you to pee in my mouth on the first date.
Yeah.
Even if that person's into bondage and likes to pee in people's mouths, that person's going to be like, you have no common sense that you would say that.
Right.
Even though I would love to do that to you, but I don't want to do that to you now because you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Because people want to be with partners who have some fucking common sense.
Yeah.
And also are a little bit cool. Yeah, have some game.
Yeah, exactly.
Have a little swag. Yeah. Have a little swag more than that.
But that said, you know, you reach a certain point where you're in for a penny, in for a pound. This person may be someone you're going to be with for a long time. If they can't meet your needs, you should be anxious to be rid of them so that you can move on and find the person who can.
Do you suggest?
And so to say, like, these are the things that turn me on at a certain point, you know, have vanilla sex, do whatever, prove that you're, like, sane and fun and good at regular sex, which is going to be most of the sex that you have. Even if you have a dungeon in your house, most of the sex you have is going to be vanilla sex just because of logistics and time constraints.
Right.
But at a certain point, lay it out. And if they're like, I'm not, no. Like, all right, bye.
Right.
See ya.
So communicate it first. Like, try and talk to the other person. And like, well, this is something that I feel like I would be, you know, ease it in.
I think people, too often, but if just it's not brush compatible. Aside the sexual compatibility. I'm like,
yes.
It's so important. It's why would you possibly like? But we like the same movies, and we like to go to the same concerts. What the fuck are you talking about?
I don't know if it's possible to have a loving relationship without any sexual compatibility, romantic relationship.
Oh, there are people who are in long-term committed romantic intimate relationships where there's very little or no sex at all.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think
okay with that.
And they're
okay.
Both satisfied, and neither is unhappy. And so, those of us who are in relationships where sex is prioritized, we shouldn't tell those people that there's something wrong with them or wrong with their relationships. And we do. The culture does. It says if you're not fucking like crazy at 25 or 30 years, that your marriage is a lie and a sham and it's dead inside.
Yeah.
And it's just not true.
Right.
Like, it depends on what makes you happy at whatever stage of life you're at. And there are people that sex is very important to, I think, all around this table.
Right.
And there are people that sex is not important to at all.
And that's okay.
Yeah, some people are just less,
find
it's all the pressure.
Other.
Everyone has so much pressure on themselves, especially with sex. I feel like so many people have written into us like, I'm scared to tell him what I want. He's going to think I'm a whore if I tell him I want to do this. I'm like, oh.
Tell him.
Breaks my heart. Like,
yeah, and if someone thinks you're a whore, bye-bye.
You know what breaks my heart? The flip side of that with a dude where the girlfriend begged and pressured and wheedled and cajoled him into telling her his deepest, darkest secret fantasies. And what she wanted to hear was, I want to light 1,000 little tea candles in our apartment. And throw rose petals in the tub, just like Ross did for Rachel on that episode of Friends that you saw when you were 13. And he'll finally tell her,
sorry, I want to shit in your mouth.
I want you to pee on me, and she'll freak the fuck out. Ladies, guys are like testosterone-soaked dick monsters. And a lot of male fantasies are really kind of like dark and disturbing and weird. Same with female fantasies.
Right.
50 Shades of fucking Grey. The difference yeah. between young straight people, guys know what their kinks are at 15 and they've been jacking off about them for 3 or 4 years already.
Really?
Women seem to come into their kinks later in life.
Why do guys know them earlier?
I think it's about sexual peak. And this is just me yanking a theory out of my ass. Guys hit their sexual peak as teenage boys, and the box that's got the normal label on it can't contain all of desire, passion, weirdnesses, and it springs these really interesting links. And women hit their sexual peaks in their late 20s, early 30s, and suddenly there's this ferocity to female desire then.
Interesting.
That there isn't. And so,
that's such a huge, 15 and 30, that's a huge.
It's another sign that difference. Men and women are fundamentally sexually incompatible and appear to be gay.
They kind of are.
Or women should marry 15-year-old boys.
Well, yeah, maybe. Some have. Or tried. I kind of do. I was thinking that the other day. Like, are men and women incompatible sexually? I kind of think everyone is. Like, it's just, there's always going to be. No one's ever going to be on the exact.
Well, that's true in a same-sex relationship,
page.
Too. It's just the advantage of being in a same-sex relationship. Again, if you've told your mother the truth about being a cocksucker, you're not going to, like, fuck around with lying to your boyfriend or put up with being lied to by your boyfriend. And there's a lot of like game playing in straight land.
There is. Oh, there's all, I gotta be cool. I gotta be.
There's game playing in gay land too, but it's
more
a different
straight
flavor.
I've noticed it too. I kind of noticed it too. I mean, your gay friends are so honest with what they want. They get what they want. And I just
believe
really
me, there's a lot,
that.
There's a lot of turmoil in my gay friends land though.
It can be a double edged sword. Like some gay people can be too glib. It can come too easy to them. You know, I'm old enough to remember the 80s when everyone fucked each other to death, literally.
Right.
So that ease with which gay men can get dick, it's hard for straight guys to get pussy. It's hard. And you know, straight guys write to me and they wail and moan about this fact. And why are women less sort of sexually adventurous, more reserved? Well, rape, pregnancy, sexually transmitted infections go easier from male to female than female to male. All the negative consequences of...
And there's so many guys trying to fuck them all the time.
Well, there's a scarcity problem. That's why there are so many more... That's why there's a... You know, sex workers are almost always women meeting the needs of men. There's this supply and demand problem. There's an oversupply of dick and an undersupply of pussy. And that's the culture that hammers it into women that they're the keepers of the monogamous flame. And it shuts down female sexuality in this way that's very damaging, I think, to opposite sex relationships.
And it is a lot of pressure.
That's why girls get into clubs free and men gotta pay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing. Well, we talked about communication and relationships. I'm a big fan of, like, not, you don't gotta know everything about me. And I know you have said that a relationship is not a deposition. And I was like, thank God. Because I don't lie to people, but I mean, there's just something.
You have your own secrets.
You don't need to. I feel like we have this thing where we'll tell someone everything, but it's more relieving your own guilt 9 times out of 10 when you're just gonna end up hurting that person by telling them everything.
Right. Or it's sadism masquerading as honesty. I'm just being honest. Sadism masquerading as, you know, emotional sadism, not fun, consensual sadism, masquerading as, you know, a quality or a fine characteristic. I'm just being honest. As I tell you these things that are destroying you, I'm just being honest.
Yeah. So do you have like kind of like a test in your head, like that you say, like, is this something I need to share? Is this something not? How do you differentiate between those things?
Especially if it's something that could hurt another person.
It's a case by case basis. You know, if you have HIV, there's going to be a moment you have to disclose, and you should disclose prior to becoming intimate. You know, if there's a lot to say about that. And there are other things. Like, I did sex work for a couple years in college. Do your friends know? Do you have ex-boyfriends who know, who are furious at you for dumping them? Is there someone who'll see a wedding announcement in the paper and send, you know, cached Google pages of your old ads to your current fiance? Well, then you might need to disclose that.
Right.
But if you did it and nobody on earth knows and you didn't tell anybody, that may be a secret that you can take to the grave. It's okay to let somebody love a sort of slightly fictionalized version of you. He's in love with somebody who would never do sex work. I know sex work. He'll never know that. And he doesn't need to know that. And you can let him love the like slightly idealized version of you because you're loving a slightly idealized version of him. When two people meet, they lie to each other. Uh-huh. Everyone puts on their best face, their best look, they got their best game.
Yeah.
And then you get to know the person behind that facade, and you treat that in a loving working relationship, you treat that person as if they're the lie they trotted out that night you met. Mm-hmm. And then they have to live up to that lie a little bit. So even though you can see the cracks, even though you know they're not all everything they've presented themselves to be, you invest in that fiction. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a courtesy that you do each other. It makes you better people over the long term as you're pulled, hopefully, closer toward your best-ish self. Mm-hmm. And you know that they're not who you think they are, or who you, you know, suspend your disbelief and pretend they are, and you know that they're doing the same thing for you. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of beautiful.
It is. And it's, I think it's important to keep working towards that, or working at that a little as your relationship goes on. Like, you can't just get lazy all of a sudden and just be sloppy and not care and just, you know, everywhere.
You want to take each other for granted.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I sometimes I'll feel myself getting a little sloppy, like, just, I don't care. I don't, you know, but then it's like, you know, it's my man. I want to look hot. Like, let's go out to dinner. I want to wear some
high heels. Let's get rid of this pubic hair and get out to dinner.
Yeah, it's like shave my vagina.
Take off your sweatpants.
I'm going to shave my vagina. And my leg, the leg shaving thing, like, kind of goes out the window a little bit.
See, that's the one thing I never let go. The legs are always shaved because it bothers me.
Sometimes,
it's uncomfortable to sleep.
Sometimes I don't care. I'm like, he doesn't really care. But then it's like, you know what? No, I want to be smooth.
And also, I just never want to hear anyone take a shit ever.
You know, that's unavoidable. You can't avoid that.
Never. There are hotels in Europe you can never stay in because the toilet is basically in the room.
I've done a pretty good job in long-term relationships of just avoiding. I'm like, I'll go down the
shit
the
happens.
Hall. I'll go down the hallway.
I'm gonna take a shit and throw it out the window. I'll be back.
Guys, matches, they really do work.
Yeah.
We'll say that.
Yeah, matches are beautiful.
I went a long time of my life covered. Just using Lysol. No, matches.
I'm with you, kind of.
Like. Do you fart in front of boyfriends?
No.
I do. Oh, the Mm-mm. second Steven's ever had a girlfriend fart in front of him, and the second that I did, because I'll fart in front of a guy, I don't care. But after a certain period of time, he was so excited.
Some guys will pay you to fart in front
of
him. Shit, I should.
You can monetize those farts.
Shit, that's a good idea, Dan. I think I'm going to do that. And so when I did, though, it's like, oh, yay, you're normal. You're not pretending to be perfect all the time. And that's awesome.
I think I was with Terry for 15 years before I could fart in front
of
him.
Are you serious?
Whereas he was farting in front of me like 30 seconds after we met.
Some and people that are just turn not you into off the farting.
It's just, it's charming, maybe.
I don't think it's charming, but.
Neither do I. I don't, my family, like, they'll burp in front of each other at, like, you know, Christmas, and I'm like, no, why are we doing that? Like,
you know, the danger of farting in front of each other is that you get so comfortable farting in front of each other, and then you'll be with him and you'll fart because you're together, and then you realize, oh, I'm at a dinner party and I just did this. Like, you have to always remember.
That's
like,
so
you do this association where, oh, I can fart in front of you, and then you forget that you're just like other people in the room.
I've totally done that before.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I've totally done that, because then you're like, oh, now I'm used to comfortably farting in front of a person.
You made this Pavlovian association.
Not CVS when you're waiting to get your birth control online.
Oh, yeah.
That's rude.
Birth control you won't need. Then.
Yeah.
Definitely not in CVS.
Yeah. Oh, I got to stop farting in public.
All right. I think we are wrapping up, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
Is there anything you want to say?
Yeah, is there anything that you...
I love
you. We just have to be conscious of time.
Yeah.
We wanted to sit down for like 3 hours.
I love being in New York because everybody's so hot.
Right?
Like, New York's just such a great place to...
You're hot.
To look
You're
at
really
people.
Hot.
Oh, pshaw.
No, I'm serious. I'm like uncomfortable.
That was like the first thing that we said.
How old are you?
26.
28.
I am old enough to... I was ejaculating before either of you
even
were born.
Hotter.
I could
even
be
hotter.
Your dad.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Let's go. Got a daddy fantasy. Let's
do it.
Being surrounded by beautiful people in New York actually makes me feel more beautiful. Like, I love...
Well, it's like you have to step
people.
Your game up.
Yeah.
Just like keep it together. And that's nice. I like
be
to be surrounded by motivated people who give a shit. Like, I don't
who
give
have
a
good
fuck,
fashion.
But
there's
like
a sizzle
there's a
in
different.
The air,
yeah.
In
yeah. Exactly.
That just isn't in the air in Cleveland.
And it's not even, you know what? It's not even in the
it's
air
not?
In LA. I like lost weight. The first time I went to LA, I lost weight. I got my nails done. And I was like, people in New York look 1,000 times better. Everyone was walking around with like Juicy Couture on their butt.
People in LA, in New York, everywhere you go, you're on the street. You're like, you're out in public.
You're
in a car.
Kinda.
Yeah, you're. You're always on display.
I can't go, like, when I go to the deli in my PJs, I feel like an asshole. Like, I'm like, oh, who's going to see me? I don't know. The Empire State Building's right there. I gotta get my game on.
I was going to say, they don't serve asshole at the deli I go to. I go to the deli in my PJs. I feel like an asshole. But it's not on the board.
Well, you know, sometimes you feel like an asshole.
Do you have any closing statements? Any things that you like to say? This is like a motto I live by. This is how I fuck.
This is something I've never told anyone else in the world.
An exclusive. I don't know.
Guys,
oh my God, I've been running my mouth in public for so long.
I know, I was like, this time, what is to be said that has not been said?
I got nothing.
One of the questions I was like, oh, Steven, do you have maybe, you know, I'm putting together questions for Dan. He goes, yeah, I wonder if he thinks what you're doing is healthy. Like having this, like interviewing every guy.
That's an interesting closing statement, actually. Yeah.
Do you think this is healthy? Is it where?
I think it's ballsy, over easy. I wouldn't do it.
Really?
I like.
Yes, we're doing something Dan Savage would. Wow.
I like to. I don't think the guys I fuck should ever speak in public about it. Particularly the ones I fucked when I wasn't very good at it.
Well, yeah,
that's true.
It's always fun to learn to recall those times. Like I'm better. I swear. You wouldn't do it, huh?
No, but you know, I'll tell you what. When my ex-boyfriend hears this podcast, I'll let him know that if he wants to come on the show and be interviewed about having fucked me.
Wow. Yeah,
he's more than welcome to.
Or maybe Terry. Terry doesn't let me talk about our sex life in public, but maybe he would talk
this
about
is
it.
His, this is his opportunity.
Yo, Terry, what up? You don't have to.
The idea of Terry in front of a live microphone just gives me panic attack.
Oh, really? He's never done that?
I had Steven.
It's not
on.
That he's never done it. It's that he never should.
Oh, why? Because he talks.
Because he has no filter. And...
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's
we
beautiful.
Love him.
That's our favorite kind of
he's
guest.
He's a welcomed guest.
Yes, anytime.
But then you can come and be outside her house and disperse the picket line after Tara's on your show.
Oh, I will Brother. Disperse some picket lines.
We will. We'll fly. We do have a place to stay in Seattle, actually.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
Yay.
Remember?
No.
Will Clark.
Oh, the guy who emailed us. Someone emailed us and was if you ever want to come to Hump in Seattle, you could stay at
He's
my house.
He's a former gay male porn star.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's so nice.
I love him. He's great.
Me too.
Yeah, come to Hump in Seattle. HumpSeattle.com. People should submit to Hump.
How long is it going on? Oh, and the cool thing about Hump that I really love that I wasn't aware of that I kind of like want to do it now. No one, those porn videos aren't online. No one can see them. You really are, you make sure no one in the audience
has a phone. You're a porn star for the weekend, as you said.
No one can take out their phone during, even to text or even to look at their phone. I think that you create such a safe environment for the people submitting videos. I'm like, okay.
That's what has always sort of driven Hump in Seattle and Portland. It's this amateur porn festival. All the films are 5 minutes or less. It's amazing what someone can do with 5 minutes. People create really sexy, interesting, hot, funny films.
The humor was amazing.
But the idea is we wanted to, you know, to encourage people to take part in it who didn't want to, you know, who otherwise might not do porn because they don't want their great-grandchildren to see their tits online someday.
It's online
or their
forever.
Colleagues or coworkers or siblings or parents right now. So we police the theaters. Everyone has to put their phones away. We take people's phones. You know, we have bouncers who will grab your phone.
You have fake audience members.
We have fake audience members who are looking sideways. And we haven't had a leak in all these 9 years. And people literally, you know, I know people who are lawyers and teachers and, you know, people in positions where they could really get in trouble if they had porn online who have participated in Hump and loved it because they have this exhibitionist sort of thing in their soul and they have nowhere to express it.
Right.
And they'll sit in a theater with 500 people and watch themselves in this porno and just have such a blast.
Wow. That sounds so, you're giving, that's such a unique opportunity. And to watch, I was so impressed. These people were great in the movies.
I know, because I was like, is this one of those things where I'm going to be like, oh, we should really leave it to the professionals? And I didn't feel, I felt,
not at
I was
all.
Like, this is better than a lot of the porn I've watched
romantic,
in real life.
It was.
And the thing that I love about Hump every year is that it does something that, and I have friends who are mainstream porn stars. Trenton Ducati. Hello, Trenton. I have friends who are porn stars. There's a lot of great commercial porn out there, but the line that Hump filmmakers seem to be able to walk, and it's everything from like actual filmmakers. Lynn Shelton, the indie filmmaker, made a Hump submission 1 year.
Awesome.
To like people making films on their phones with a couple of friends that have won awards. But people seem to be able to make the films funny and hot at the same time.
Yeah.
That there's this humanity in the merging of humor and sexiness that is usually how we experience sex in our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could be having sex and it's hot for like 10 minutes in a row and kind of intense, and then something happens, you both have a laugh and you dive right back in. And that's what so many of the Hump films are like.
Yeah, that was amazing. I was so impressed. Guys, humptour.com. Is it still going on, right?
Yeah, we're still adding more cities all around the country. And if you go to humptour.com and click on submit, you can find out how to submit. Unlike a lot of short indie film festivals, there's no charge to enter. I'm always amazed at people who make you pay to enter a film in their film festival.
It is 18 and up, though, I'm guessing, right?
I think it's 21.
Oh,
it might
21
be 18.
And up. Okay.
And there are $10,000 worth of prizes. Usually about 20, 24 films make it into Hump, and there's a $5,000 best in show prize, $1,000 best kink, $1,000 best humor, $1,000 best sex, because not all the films have sex in them. Some of them are erotica or animation,
right. Mm-hmm.
And a $1,000 jury award. So there's $10,000 in prizes at Hump. And so, and if you make it in, if your film makes it in, you basically have like a 1 in 4 shot of walking away with some money.
Dough.
That's awesome.
And having an audience see you fuck on camera, and then
that's a reward enough right there.
It really is. And with the knowledge, it's a unique thing. With the knowledge of it's not going to get leaked on the internet. No one else is going to see it.
That's the problem. So we say we'll do our best.
Of course.
Because we police the audience to take it really seriously, but we can't guarantee that some asshole won't attempt
to take a photo or something, right?
But it's never happened.
Right.
Because you're intimidating, that's why.
I did not want to fuck with you.
You were standing right next to me, and I was like, I had to put my phone away because I was still holding it. I didn't know there was going to be this thing, and I was like, oh, if he sees me, I'm going to get hurt. I'm so scared. I'm so scared right now.
We grabbed a phone from someone at the New York screening.
Oh, really?
And she came out into the lobby. I was just Snapchatting a picture.
Like, dude, what are you talking about?
There's a time and place for that, my friend.
Oh my gosh.
But like, no phones, no pictures, no video rule applies also to Snapchatting, you fucking moron. Hopefully she's a listener, you fucking moron.
And also, why are you Snapchatting? It's all about Instagram.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yes, I'm Snapchat.
No, I don't like Snapchat.
Well, she thought it would be okay to maybe surreptitiously take a picture of the porn if she Snapchatted it, because then there wouldn't be a permanent photo. But of course, somebody can do a screen grab.
I was like, yeah, if you
Snapchat.
Have an iPhone, come on. It's technology, people. All right, anyway, check out Hump Tour online. Also, you can follow Dan on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. Am I correct? I'm good, mm-hmm. right?
You're
and
good.
You can follow us at Sorry About Last Night. It's SRY About Last NYT. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much
thank
for being
you,
a guest.
Dan.
We were
my pleasure.
So excited.
This was a goal. You're a dream guest.
Oh, well, thanks.
You're one of the reasons why I was so excited to embark on this podcast, because I was like, oh, shit, do I want to do this? And then I was like, you know what? Yeah, I do. Sex positive.
We are so glad we did. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening, guys. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.